This is number 0034, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0034. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet flight attendant Betty, who is the woman behind the book and the online radio show Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. Many wacky things take place at 30,000 feet, and it's not just the passengers.
You know, here's the thing. My job is one of the least supervised jobs there are. You know, we don't have a boss on the plane. We have flight attendants. Oh, I probably shouldn't say this, but we have flight attendants that if they were doing another job, would have been fired within like 3 days. But they've been flying for 30 years.
Rocky Lang is the author of the novel The Big Nasty. Just what is the Big Nasty?
The Big Nasty is the term for offing somebody. It's a murder. The book really has a murder or a sort of a, I can't say it's a murder, but somebody dies in the book, and it's called The Big Nasty. And so that's as much as I'm going to give away.
We'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Oh, boy, got to take a timeout. All right, you know, I got to tell you, hold on, 1 second, another timeout here. Now, back to what I was saying. One more timeout. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Boy, oh boy, you're going to want to stick around for my 2-minute tirade. It's coming up just a short time from now, later on, right here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There's also a check of the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0034, was David Eady, financial advisor for the Wealth Management Group. He's also the director of education for SiteSell.com. That's SiteSell.com. And thank you very much, David, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff. As I mentioned, coming up a little later on, we'll be talking to flight attendant Betty. So we do have a few stories in the Stuff File that deal with planes. Sort of. We start off with a story from London. Two women were arrested at a British airport on suspicion of trying to smuggle a dead relative onto a flight bound for Germany. Hey, it's weekend at Bernie's. The 91-year-old deceased man was pushed in a wheelchair through Liverpool's John Lennon Airport wearing sunglasses before check-in staff became suspicious and he was prevented from boarding the plane. He was believed to have been driven about 35 miles to the airport by taxi from Oldham, Greater Manchester. The women, aged 41 and 66, were arrested on suspicion of failing to give notification of a death and were released on bail. The cause of death is not known. Now, the older woman is actually this guy's wife. She says her husband was still alive when they reached the airport. Gita Gerant told Bild newspaper she hopes to get the remains of her husband, Willie, from Britain as soon as possible to have him cremated and then return to Berlin. The other woman arrested was her daughter, by the way. Gerant said, "I'm not a smuggler. My Willie only died at the airport." If I had a nickel for every time I heard that line. He suddenly looked so lifeless, like a wax figure. His fingernails turned blue all of a sudden. At home, he was still warm. I swear. Okay, Gitta, okay. That's the last time you get to push your husband around. Meanwhile, a story from Germany. A German meat supplier has found a novel solution to unpaid bills, repossessing the steaks right off diners' plates. Police said that a dispute over money ended with the man grabbing his wares off the plates of some 20 bemused guests at a restaurant. A furious argument erupted in the kitchen after the man made his delivery, but was told that the restaurant didn't immediately have the 400 euros in cash to pay his bill. The vendor then took back the meat he delivered, including steaks already being cooked or marinated. That still didn't cover the bill, so he continued collecting meat in the dining room. Police arrived at the scene after he left, but they say they believe no offense has been committed. Meanwhile, on to Madrid, Spanish police say they have detained a man they suspect of robbing 10 pharmacies at gunpoint, taking all available boxes of Viagra as well as cash from the register. Police began their investigation in January after receiving reports of a series of robberies of pharmacies in central Madrid by a lone gunman whose only objective was taking boxes of Viagra and cash. The authorities suspect that the 43-year-old man would sell the pills on the black market, where they are sought by users for recreational purposes, often in combination with illegal drugs. Combined with the illegal drug ecstasy, it is known on the club scene as sextasy. Viagra manufacturer Pfizer warns the drug should not be taken unless it is recommended by a doctor. Did I really need to read that sentence just now? I don't think so. Anyway, theoretically, that guy should have been pretty easy to find. All you had to do was just look for a guy pitching a tent in his pants. Meanwhile, let's go to Phoenix, shall we? Controversial Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio is at it again. He always finds a way of getting himself in the news. This time, he has started a program he calls Pedal Vision, in which inmates pedal stationary bikes to generate electricity for television sets. The bikes are customized to turn on connected TV sets once inmates at Phoenix's Tent City Jail pedal enough to generate 12 volts of electricity. An hour of pedaling equals an hour of television. Arpaio said inmates only will be able to watch television if they choose to pedal. He said he started the program with female inmates because they seem more receptive. Arpaio said the only exercise female inmates have been getting is speed walking around the tent yard. Gee, that's not what I see in women's prison films, but I digress. Anyway, he said pedal vision gives them a reason to get moving and a way to burn calories. Way to go, Joe. Way to go, Joe. Meanwhile, in Sweden, a rail worker has been given his second warning for causing train delays because he was too busy looking at porn to watch the trains. And when he did give the porn a break, he was visiting online gambling sites. It was his job to make sure the train signals were changed properly so that the trains left on time and didn't run into each other. So, yeah, this is kind of a problem. And all those nasty porn sites managed to infect the train's computer systems with computer viruses. They told him if it happens again, he's fired. Shouldn't they have told him that after the first time? Never mind after the second time? But I digress. You think some people pay no attention or take advantages of their work situation? How about this next story, coming from Islamabad? Authorities in Pakistan have suspended a local doctor who was caught taking a cow home from the market in an ambulance. Dr. Munir Kadri was caught red-handed, or should I say red meat-handed. He was carrying a cow in an ambulance from Kunja Market to his residence in Tanda Village, the head of the local police station, Muhammad Akram, said. Kadri, head of a rural health center in Tandra near the border with India, bought the animal at a nearby cattle market. Police stopped his ambulance and found the animal inside, tied to a metal bar. Health authorities have suspended Kadri and launched an investigation. "This is a misuse of authority," said a senior health official. "I have never heard such a thing happening in the past, an ambulance carrying an animal. We have suspended the doctor and the ambulance driver," said the health worker. Hey, how does the doctor convince the ambulance driver that this is a good idea? "By the way, I gotta get this cow home. Can we just put him in the back of the ambulance?" "No, really, I'm a doctor. I know what I'm doing." Okay. Well, we just got through Easter, and of course Easter is a very special time for Christians, you know, the resurrection of Christ and all, a very holy season, the holiest of seasons, as a matter of fact. And some people just seem to miss the whole point of Easter. It doesn't get any classier than a fist fight over Easter candy at Walmart, does it? Seven women got into a brawl on April the 3rd at a Walmart in Salisbury, North Carolina, when they were scrambling to get their hands on Easter candy. Eggs, chocolate bunnies, and peeps flew along with the fists, and the women wound up causing $800 worth of damage in the store. Jesus wouldn't be happy. Jesus would not be happy. Yes. We have one more story here on the Stuff File program before we get to our first guest, and this one does deal with planes. Doesn't matter how ridiculous your threat is, if you make a threat on a plane, it's going to go badly for you. Stewards on a Qantas flight from Sydney to Singapore had to restrain one passenger by putting handcuffs on his hands and feet after he threatened to bring down the plane with the power of his mind. Passengers sitting near the man believe he was under the influence of drugs or alcohol or both and had religious delusions. Police in Singapore boarded the flight and arrested the man after the other passengers disembarked. A spokesman for Singapore's police said they were still holding the man and his actions were under investigation. It's amazing some of the things that happen while in the friendly skies, which is kind of a segue to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You know, at any given moment, there are tens of thousands of people who are airborne, and with that many strangers crammed into flying metal tubes at 30,000 feet, strange things are bound to happen. Luckily, one flight attendant likes to chronicle these stories. She has a podcast called Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase, which is now also the name of her book. Joining us through the wonderful world of Skype-to-Skype communications is Betty in the Sky herself. Hi, Betty. How are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. You have been a flight attendant for quite a while, and now you write about it. You have a podcast that deals with it, and you share some of the, I guess, wild and wacky things that happen over the friendly skies. And I'm just wanting to ask you right off the bat. You know, there's been so much done and said over the last few years with airport and airline security. Is it as fun to fly for you as it was when you first started?
Okay, well, that's a very loaded question. Yes, there have been many changes and things. The same things that frustrate the passengers also frustrate the flight crew. You know, we have to go through security. We have to take our shoes off. All that stuff is frustrating. And so it has changed. Some of the carefree attitude of flying has certainly changed. So it has brought its own challenges. But I still love my job. And I still love the travel benefits. I still love meeting all the people. So even though things have changed and, you know, it's not quite as glamorous as it used to be, I still think it's a really good job.
Do you fly just domestically or do you do international flights as well?
I do both.
You do both. Okay. So what's more interesting, and I'm not talking about the fact that you get to go to wonderful and exotic destinations, but just in terms of the job itself, what's a more interesting flight? What's a more interesting clientele? Is it domestic or is it international?
You know, that doesn't matter. It could be a 30-minute flight and you could have, it's like when you have the wacky people. You know, you get these characters, they don't understand the whole flying concept. Anytime you have any of those people, it doesn't matter where you're going, but those people are very entertaining.
Now, I understand that you come from a large family.
Yes, 10 children. I'm the youngest of 10.
Youngest of 10.
Yep.
Does that situation make you well-suited to be a flight attendant?
You know, actually, nobody actually has asked me that before, but you're exactly right. You know, there was no space when you have 10 children. there's only 1.5 bathrooms for 12 people. So I was always used to being in a confined area with a lot of people. So yes, maybe it did help.
So tell us some of the things, because the subtitle of the book is Hilarious Stories of Air Travel from the World's Favorite Flight Attendant. So there you go.
And, you know, that is a little disconcerting because I'm afraid, you know, we have all the gay flight attendants, you know, and I think they're going to, if I ever have a bad day, they're going to be saying, like, you ain't nobody's favorite. You know, like, whose favorite do you think you are? I'm expecting a little backlash from that.
Well, first of all, when did the book come out? Because I understand you started doing the podcast first and then a book came out of that, correct?
Yes, I started the podcast in 2005, so I've actually been doing it a long time. And it's just all funny airline and travel stories. And the podcast got so popular that a publisher actually came to me and asked if I wanted to write a book, which is not the usual process. So I was very fortunate with that.
Well, what made you start the podcast in the first place?
Well, one thing is I'm a big old ham. I love to tell stories. And I love, this is something most people don't realize because, you know, they think of flying as this tedious, laborious thing. But there's all these really funny airline stories, like just crazy things happen at 35,000 feet. And I always loved all the stories and I love old fashioned like radio. So basically they really melded together very well. So this way you get old fashioned radio and all the stories are about flying and travel and just crazy airline things.
The wacky stories, do they mostly involve the passengers or do they sometimes involve other crew members?
Oh, lots of times they involve other crew members. We have crazy, you know, here's the thing. My job is one of the least supervised jobs there are. You know, we don't have a boss on the plane. we have flight attendants. Oh, I probably shouldn't say this, but we have flight attendants that if they were doing another job would have been fired within like 3 days, but they've been flying for 30 years.
Like, well, you know, it's interesting. You say you don't have any bosses on the plane, but is it not possible that any one of the passengers could be a superior in your own airline and you not know it? Aren't you always being watched?
Well, it is like living in a fishbowl. And I actually was just talking about this recently, that I don't have a boss. My only real boss is actually the passengers. They are my boss, but I don't have, what I'm saying is it's not very supervised. So like we just had a flight attendant recently who came to work in one high heel and one flat. And the other guy, flight attendant, was like, "What are you doing?" She goes, "Oh, I grabbed the wrong shoes when I was leaving." And he's like, "We're on a 3-day trip. You can't walk around with one high heel and one flat." So he came back to the galley and she was in her bare feet, like her stocking feet. And he's like, "No, you can't do that either." All I'm saying is that it is not a very supervised job. It's sort of self-supervised. So we can have some wacky people. There's no safety, you know, issues with that. Just some crazy folks.
Is it polite to ask how long you've been a flight attendant?
Oh, no, I don't mind at all. I've been flying 23 years.
Okay. And do you prefer the term flight attendant? Do you get upset with the term stewardess? I won't say what Joan Rivers has been calling people over the years.
Oh, no. What has she been calling people over the years?
She's a stand-up comic, right?
Yes. Yeah. I love to be made fun of.
Oh, I don't know if you want to go this direction. She high altitude hookers.
Oh, that's okay. Okay. I'm not saying it's okay, but I never get offended.
Okay.
You can't offend me. Actually, I was doing an interview with the BBC and they said, "How do you like being called a trolley dolly?" And I'm like, "Oh, I've never heard that one before." Trolley dolly. And I never heard of the high altitude hookers before. That's definitely a new one on me. I should probably write that down.
Okay. So in all the years you've been doing this, some 20 plus years, what's the wackiest thing that's happened as far as you're concerned in the air?
You know what? It is so hard to say just one. And actually, I tend to cause some of the wacky things because it makes for better stories for my podcast. Again, nothing, you know, safety related. But on one flight, I was flying to Honolulu and the captain was a very playful guy. And we had been talking about different pranks that people pull on each other and how these days, with everything being so serious, we just don't do those types of things anymore. And I started talking with one of the other pilots about the toilet paper trick. Do you know anything about this?
No, I don't think I do.
Okay, so I was telling the captain, and I'll tell you all about it in just a second, but he was like, "Can we do it? Can we do it?" And I'm like, no, I've only done this trick when there weren't passengers on the plane or if it's just the flight attendants on the plane, and we're on a totally full flight to Honolulu. And he's like, "Oh, come on, let's do it, let's do it." I'm like, "Well, you know, he's the captain." So I go back to the cabin, and I tell one of my fun-loving fellow flight attendants, I'm like, "We're going to do the toilet paper trick." And she's like, "What's that?" So she hadn't heard of it either. So this is what you do. You wad up some toilet paper and you put it in the toilet. And, you know, if you've been on a plane, you know that toilet is, the flush is very strong, the suction. So you wad up the toilet paper, and then I'm wearing my uniform dress and I start walking down the aisle, unrolling the toilet paper in front of all the passengers, totally full flight during the day. Everybody's awake. They're looking at me like I'm crazy. And some people said, like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm doing an experiment." And they're like, you know, their curiosity was piqued even more. So I'm rolling out the toilet paper. And now I have to go get the pilot because with all the security measures now, it's hard to get them in and out of the cockpit, so we can't have anybody step on the toilet paper because this will ruin the trick. So my flight attendant friend in the back, this little boy is going to walk up the aisle, and she says, "Don't step on the toilet paper." So he starts walking bow-legged the aisle so he doesn't mess up the toilet paper. We get the captain out. I gave my accomplice in the back the thumbs up. She hit the flush, and that toilet paper went shoo, like a wet noodle, like 3 feet in the air all the way back to the back of the plane. And the passengers were like, "What?" They had their hands in the air like, you know, like it was the wave football game. And you know what? It's those kind of things. And I know this doesn't happen very often and we can't have everybody doing that on every flight. But there are those kind of things that really make flying fun. It's something that a lot of people have forgot. You know, we've lost the thrill of it. You know, it used to be a fun thing to do.
I was thinking, I want to be on your flight.
I know. Everybody says that. And then I do other things, too. But like I said, it's all, you know, it's all good fun. Nothing too crazy. But that toilet paper thing, it is amazing when it works.
When it works.
Sometimes it doesn't work because you kind of got to go around the corner sometimes, you know, and toilet paper is a little fragile, especially if it's cheap toilet paper.
Right.
So it sometimes it works perfectly. And then there's other times where it only goes a little ways.
I guess it's got to be first class toilet paper, right?
There you go.
The book is called Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. It's also the name of the podcast. You could also check out her website, which is bettyinthesky.com. I got to say, you have just such an infectious personality. It must be something that only rubs off on the rest of the crew, but also on the passengers that fly with you. And as a result, I think they're all probably very lucky people.
Well, I feel lucky to have them.
I thank you.
As my bosses.
I thank you very, very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Betty the Flight Attendant, who is the author of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. You know, I've done thousands of interviews in over 30 years of broadcasting, and I got to tell you, that is the perkiest, happiest person you will ever meet. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is number 0034, and you'll find links to Betty's page plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca where you can order her book directly. What a fun gal she is. I'm sure we'll have her back on the show. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Abidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on The Stuff File program, we'll meet the author of The Big Nasty, plus we'll check the mailbag. There is Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And, of course, an idiot of the day, plus lots and lots of stuff, including more stuff right here, right now. You know, it's probably not that unusual of a story. A soldier knocks up a girl right before he goes off to war. She gets pregnant and then sues for child support. But he refuses to pay, even when he gets back home, and then wants nothing to do with the mom or the child. Well, what makes this story so unique is that soldier in question is 82-year-old Urban Joseph Grass, and the war he went off to was the Korean War in 1950. The woman he allegedly impregnated was Rosemary Douglas, who's now 81 years old, and the child in question is a retired grandfather. But Rosemary has not given up the fight. She says Grass was court-ordered to pay $50 a month in child support, something Grass says he never knew. Douglas insists she repeatedly tried to reach Grass and to get him to release funds from his military allotment to cover the support, but he refused. When her son Gerald was about 6, she finally gave up and got married. But now a widow, she says she could really use the $57,000 in back child support that she claims Grass owes her, which includes ever-rising interest. But more important than the money, she said, it's the principle. When she managed to locate Grass in Texas, she hired a process server to deliver court papers and figures it's worth one more shot in the courts. Grass hired an attorney who said, "We are hoping to make this go away pretty quickly. I suspect it's an old lady down on her luck who's looking for some money." Really? And you want this to go away quickly? Well, let's see. He's 82, she's 81, and the courts move very slowly. You do the math. oh, this will go away, one way or the other. Okay, here's a story dealing with sex education that comes from the City of London, Ontario. The City Health Office in London, Ontario, created an online sex education game that officials hope will appeal to teenagers in that its messages are delivered by a cast of iconic superheroes. According to a February report by CanWest News Service, and by the way, CanWest are the same fine folks that own the Global Television Network, which is one of my employers, the players in this game are Captain Condom, who wears a cap, Wonder Vag, a virgin girl, Power Pap, who is sexually active, and Willy the Kid, with each fighting the villain Sperminator, who wears a red wrestling mask and has phalluses for arms. Now, the characters answer sex knowledge questions and, with correct answers, obtain protection. But a wrong answer gets the player squirted with sperm. Have they thought this thing through? Really? At press time, the game is still accessible on their website, although I don't know how long it will last. Their website is www.getitonlondon.com. And I've put a link in from my site to their site for however long it's there. Check it out. It's a hoot. I know it sounds like something that would be an April Fool's joke, but trust me, it's not. And speaking of April Fools, a silly April Fool's joke published by a newspaper in Jordan caused major panic in the capital. The newspaper claimed that 10-foot-tall aliens and UFOs were visiting the country. The mayor freaked out and sent security to search for the Martians, nearly calling for an emergency evacuation of the town's 1,300 citizens. Tell me, would you really have to search for 10-foot-tall aliens? You think they'd be rather evident. I'm not saying that they don't look like us, but come on, they're 10 feet tall. They would stand out, wouldn't they? Anyway, it's time to get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. On the line with us right now is Rocky Lang. He has a new book out. This one is called The Big Nasty. He was on the old radio show with us a couple of years ago with his previous book called Confessions of Emergency Room Doctors. So now he's here with his latest, and he joins us on the line from California. Hi, Rocky.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm fine. Thanks for being back with us on the program. The title, The Big Nasty. I know it's a novel, but what's it about? I don't want to get myself in trouble here.
Well, The Big Nasty is a sort of my first venture into satirical fiction. I'm a big fan of Elmore Leonard and Carl Hiaasen, and this book actually was percolating for years and years, and was originally written as a screenplay because, you know, my primary business is making movies and producing movies and writing movies and directing movies and all of that. So this had been something that had been kicking around for a long time, and it really came from this idea of that, you know, widows never lose when their husbands die in Congress in politics in some sort of way. And you always see sort of the wife, you know, coming on and taking the dead husband's seat. And I found this goes back as far as when Sonny Bono had died and Mary Bono took his seat in Congress. And then it really took on this whole other energy. And what that energy was is I just believe that this sort of post-MTV generation, that the attention span of America has been reduced to a nanosecond. And so what I did is I created a character, Lacey Cartwright, who sort of grew up in a trailer park in Death Valley and always dreamed of being an actress. And so I incorporated my Hollywood background into this. Her mother was a huge fan of the movies and television. So basically her whole concept of life is based on popular culture, movie, and television. And so she moves in a way in the world in which she incorporates all of those things that she gets from her movies and TV references in order to get herself into Hollywood. And she meets this guy named Cale Wingate, who is a older sort of Burt Reynolds type of character who is running for re-election for Congress. And she thinks that he's going to help her in Hollywood because his past was that of an action movie star. And as she develops this relationship with this guy, she's able to use this sort of popular culture movies and television background in order to start to influence policy. Well, very quickly she realizes that FaceTime in Washington is greater than FaceTime in Hollywood because she's really sort of a miserable failure on a soap opera called Play Doctor Please, which she is given. And she winds up in Washington changing policy. Now, to get around to what your original question was, what is the big nasty?
Right.
The big nasty is the term for offing somebody. It's a murder. And that the book is really has a murder or a sort of a, I can't say it's a murder, but somebody dies in the book, and it's called the big nasty. And so that's as much as I'm going to give away on the journey of Lacey Cartwright on the way to Washington.
Got you. Now, as you mentioned, you've written several books before, but this is, I guess, your first novel. But as a screenwriter, you use a certain skill in telling a story that is going to be shown on the screen or on television. Is it different writing a novel from what you've been writing in the past?
It was the most liberating experience I've ever had. Writing screenplays, for me, is a craft. It's a learned craft. First of all, you're in the business of showing and not sort of telling what the story is. So exposition is sort of a no-no in screenplay writing. Once I was able to sort of unlock the doors of writing the novel, and exposition became something that was natural in the form, it became a very liberating experience because you could not only, you could go into the internal conflict of the characters and actually talk about it. And so for me, it became an easier process. Now, I wrote The Big Nasty as a screenplay. I was unsuccessful in selling it. So when I started the novel, because it was one of these stories that I couldn't let go, I mean, I was living these characters. They're really sort of wild and quirky and kooky characters, and I just sort of really liked them, so I couldn't get it out of my system. So when I wrote the novel, it was actually very easy because the screenplay had been written, so I almost had a roadmap already to success. Meaning success, not in the novel is successful yet, but the success of completing the novel in a way that I was pleased with the result. Great fun. I encourage anybody out there in your audience who is a screenwriter to take a shot at writing a novel.
Now,
it was on my bucket list, I got to tell you.
Okay, so now that you've done this, how has the experience of writing a novel affected your work as a screenwriter?
I don't know. You know, really interestingly enough, I haven't written a screenplay since I completed the novel. I have a number of them sitting on treatments sitting on my computer, and I have actually, to be honest with you, for the first time in my life, been procrastinating about what I want to write next because the novel was so much fun to write, and the screenplays are not as much fun to write because you are you're tied to form, and yet my the money making potential for me as a screenwriter is greater than that for me as a novel. So right now I'm just sort of figuring out what I'm going to do.
Now, since I don't know how the book ends, and I don't want to give anything away to our audience, has this experience with these characters given you the chance or the desire to continue, perhaps with some of the characters that are in this book in another story?
I hope so. I mean, my publisher, her name's Nan Wishard, and she's at Gable Publishing, and it was a great experience for me with her. She's a wonderful editor and publisher. She has been after me to continue. There's a character in my book named Johnny Falducci, and Johnny Falducci is a casino owner, and he owns a casino in Vegas, which I call the Bugsy. And the Bugsy is on paid in homage to his hero, Bugsy Siegel. And I always felt that, like, you know, you had these hotels, the New York, and all these sort of bigger palaces of sin in Vegas, and I say that in a fun way, that you know, what better than to have Johnny Falducci have a hotel called the Bugsy, where you got the Machine Gun Kelly Lounge and the Mob Barker, you know, saloon and all these sort of things there. So Johnny and Lacey have this relationship that sort of, you know, sparks and sizzles and sparks again, in the book. And my publisher wants me to go ahead and, you know, sort of take Johnny and Lacey to the next level because they sort of get into bed in a certain way in the book and cause a lot of trouble for a lot of people as the story unfolds. So yes, I might take it to the next step. I think the book has to be, you know, significantly successful for me to go to that territory again, because there's a lot of territory as a writer I want to explore, that has to do with other venues.
This started out as a screenplay. It's now become a book. Should it become successful, could it go back to being a screenplay?
I sure hope so. I mean, David Frankel, you know, who was the director of Devil Wears Prada and Marley and Me, he read the book and, you know, really flipped for it and gave me an amazing blurb and said it should be a, you know, major motion picture. And, you know, maybe someday he'll latch himself onto it. Right now he's off doing another movie right now. But, you know, I hope so. I mean, one of the things that, you know, unfortunately the reaction has been, and we haven't really taken it out wide in Hollywood, is because the book is takes place in Hollywood and the book takes place in Washington, as well as Las Vegas. I mean, it's a little bit hard to sort of beat the idea that, you know, John Edwards has a sex tape. You know, you turn on CNN today and you find out John Edwards has a sex tape. You know, it's like, you know, how can you can't get more salacious than that in a novel. You can't even make up that stuff that a presidential candidate could, you know, go down this road. And so, you know, I'm competing with that, you know, in a book, and I'm not sure if people are saturated enough with that sort of information off of CNN. But we'll certainly see. All I need is to get one yes, and that's, you know, sort of what happened on my last movie, which I did at Lifetime. Every studio and, you know, network had turned it down, and then, you know, they decided to do it with Fox, and, you know, we went ahead and made the movie Racing for Time with Charles Dutton, and got an Image Award for it. So you never know. It just, you know, just takes one person to say yes.
So how does one get their hands on the book, The Big Nasty?
Right now, because it just actually was published March 15th, and it's a small press, is that the best place to get it is either at Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, or at through the publisher at Cable Publishing, www.cablepublishing.com. Eventually, it will be in the stores, but it is not yet in the stores nationally. It's in the stores here in Los Angeles because it's sort of my home turf. But, you know, where you are and in the rest of the country, the best place to do is online. Like, it's a hoot. It's fun. It was a blast to write.
And people can also get a little bit of a trailer from your website too, right?
That's right. You can go to www.rockylang.com and you can look at my sizzle reel, which is a little trailer for it, or you can also find that on the publisher's website at cablepublishing.com.
Excellent. The book is called The Big Nasty. It is written by Rocky Lang. And again, you can check his website, www.rockylang.com. Book is available on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I thank you very much, Rocky, for being on the show with us once again.
Thank you so much. It's always great to talk to you. You're the best.
Rocky Lang, author of The Big Nasty. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is number 0034. And you'll find links to Rocky's website, plus links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time to check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we have a message from Jürgen sent to me via email. He says, enjoy the show. I get it via iTunes. But I've also noticed recently that it's available on live365.com. What's the deal? Yeah, well, Jürgen, for a couple of weeks now, the show has been on a 24-hour rotation loop on the PCJ Media website. Now, Keith Perrin, who does the Happy Station show from Taiwan, has put the network together. As of this moment, it consists of 6 hours of programming that are repeated over 24 hours. The shows are, in the first hour, the Happy Station show with Keith, which comes from Taiwan. The second hour is this very program, the Stuff File program. The third hour is two shows, Network Europe Week from Radio Netherlands and Arts on the Air from Deutsche Welle. The fourth hour is Switzerland in Sound from Bern, Switzerland. And the fifth hour is Finally Friday from Cape Town, South Africa. And finally, the sixth hour is Nash Holos from Vancouver, Canada. So you can check out the website, pcjmedia.com, to find out more information. That's pcjmedia.com. And what an eye there, Jürgen, catching that on live360.com. A to go for paying attention. No prizes, but nice catch. Another shout-out, by the way, to Jamie Gore, who's been writing some nice things about this program and his blog. The blog is called Madness Brewing. It seems he has taken a liking to Steve Walsh's rants, one of which is coming up a little later on this program, of course. Much appreciated, Jamie, and I passed your words along to Steve. He appreciates them, too. I've put a link into my website to Jamie's blog so that all of you out there listening can see just what he wrote about this program and read it at your leisure. And again, thank you very much, Jamie, for listening to the show, and Jürgen, and everyone else who listens to the program. regardless of which way you do listen to the show, is now available, as I've mentioned on several occasions, via my website, also on my blog, via a download. It comes to you also from cyberstationusa.com. As we've just learned, as I just mentioned, it's also from pcjmedia.com and over the air on World FM, 88.5 FM in New Zealand, and hopefully coming to you from other places as well. We're working on this day in, day out, in hopes of growing this network big and strong. And that's the mailbag. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com.
If you're into the paranormal, then you're into Don Ecker and Dark Matters.
Something I have been immersed in for 20 years. Lunar research on items known as lunar transient phenomena. For over 400 years, world-class astronomers have been observing strange sights, lights, flashes, and other things on the moon.
Provocative topics, listeners' calls, and interesting guests.
My guest, Mr. Alan Stern.
On my website, I have a list of 100 or so lunar conspiracy theories. I had to kind of come to terms with one of them that I hadn't really thought about.
It's the kind of show that might keep you up at night.
Speculation is, at some time in our past, or perhaps even today, there is another presence on the moon. And I'm not talking about indigenous lunar folks. I'm talking about a space base by somebody else on the far side of the moon.
Dark Matters with Don Ecker, exclusively on CyberStationUSA.com.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve-a-rino?
Gosh, golly, willikers, gee, I am having the time of my life. I've just signed on to Facebook, Peter, and I'm having more fun than a human being should be allowed to have.
Welcome to the 21st century, Steve.
I know. But hey, I was tweeting a long time ago.
Yeah, that's true. How many friends do you have now?
Oh, it's must be dozens and dozens and dozens by now. It's amazing.
Let me check. Okay, I see you have 21. There you go.
Yeah, okay, well, that will improve, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's taken me a while.
Okay? I have a few more than you.
Yeah, I know, but I actually am going to talk to the people I befriend.
Well, so do I.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
All 1,600 of them.
Jeez, give me a break. Wow.
Anyway, sir, what do you have for us this week?
Okay, let's see. Dateline, Lexington, Kentucky.
That'll be the bluegrass date.
Sure would, yeah. You know, drunk in a bar and can't get out, who are you going to call? The police. That's who, at least you think that's who you're going to call. Anyway, that's what Todd Fitzwater did in Lexington. Fitzwater called 911 and said he'd gotten drunk and passed out at Todd's karaoke bar the night before, awakened and had a few more. Then he couldn't get out of the bar, which by this time, interestingly enough, was closed. Officers tapped on the door to guide the 45-year-old Fitzwater to it so he could let them in to give him a hand. The bar owner said Fitzwater is a regular who lives nearby. That's nice. That's how I want to go. But yeah. Anyway, that's not how I want to go.
There you go.
All right. Dateline, Madison, Wisconsin.
That'd be the Badger State.
Or as we like to call it,
the Cheese State.
Where the motto is,
if it's cheddar,
it's better. Kevin Johnson, he's 59 years old. He was arrested in Madison back in February, and he was charged with using a stun gun repeatedly on a local dance instructor, whom Johnson believed was a sinner. Also a fornicator, and a peeping Tom, who defiles married women by teaching them dances involving bodies touching. This is clearly a lesson in morality,
but I think it's important
that we hear what this man has to say.
By the way, is he a sinner or a fornicator? Which one?
I some would argue a fornicator is a sinner. The sinner, you don't have to be a sinner, I think, to be a fornicator.
Because I can definitely differentiate between the two.
Yes, I could. I could too, absolutely. But this guy didn't have much faith in his fellow man. Clearly, he thought it was a bad person who should be kicked out and certainly barred from any morality play. He's gone. He's out. He's history.
I've read the Bible. I don't remember seeing any. There were a lot of stonings. I don't remember seeing the use of a stun gun in the Bible.
No, neither do I. No stun gun.
Okay. Maybe it was something I missed in the New Testament. I don't know. Anyway.
No, I think it was something you met. It was in the King James Version, though.
I'll have to reread that.
Okay. Dateline, Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Ah, that'd be the volunteer state.
It sure would. A pit bull mix in Tennessee has been sentenced to, guess what he's been sentenced to? Obedience training after his dogged attack on a local police car. Winston didn't bite anybody, but he mauled a Chattanooga police car in what might have been a confused attempt to take a bite out of crime. Anyway, the persistent pooch managed to tear off a section of the front bumper and do damage to the tires. The Chattanooga Times Free Press reports that a judge ruled that Winston had been a very bad dog. He was sentenced to obedience and canine good citizen classes, and he'll have to wear a tag that says he's potentially dangerous. Charges against his owner are going to be dismissed if the classes are completed successfully. See? The dog is leading the way.
I see.
You know, it's the old thing about, you know, does the tail wag the dog or does the dog wag the tail?
There you go, yes.
Okay, that's what we're at here.
Okay.
See? Well, let's move on. Dateline, Port Clinton, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye, oh.
Ah, yes, there's that music.
Yeah, I know. Year of my life, I'll never get back.
That's the Buckeye State, by the way.
Yeah, I should have left it a long time ago, but I didn't. All right, 10 years ago. Prosecutors say an Ohio inmate's letter to his mother included detailed instructions on how to sneak drugs to him, but lacked the correct zip code. Ottawa County Sheriff Bob Bratton says the letter was returned to the Port Clinton jail where corrections officers read it along with the other incoming mail. Donald Dudrow III, he's from Toledo. He was indicted on charges of attempted drug trafficking and trying to get drugs into a correctional facility. He already was in jail, by the way, on a probation violation. How about that?
You know what I think the deeper problem with this story is?
Tell me.
I mean, here's somebody who admittedly wants to be a good mother. Now, she's going to break the law if she follows through with what her son wants her to do. But she wants to be a good mother because it's her son.
It's her son.
I get that. I don't agree with it, but I get that. But as far as the son is concerned, not even knowing your mother's right zip code, that should get life as far as I'm concerned.
That should have that dog who wanted to take a bite out of crime.
There you go.
Bite the backside of that guy. Let's move to another place, shall we?
Okay.
Dateline, Cook County, Illinois.
That'd be the land of Lincoln.
Sure would. 25-year-old Dwayne Jones used to work as a correctional officer at the Cook County Jail in Illinois. He used to because he was caught bringing to work a lovely bag of contraband items. Those items included 10 grams of marijuana, a cell phone, earphones, and ironically, several DVDs of the Discovery Channel's Cook County Jail series. And another jail related, it's another series, it's about jails, you might have seen it on TV, it's called The Squeeze.
Okay.
No, we don't even want to go there. Yeah. No. Because he was still in his probationary period, he was immediately fired and arrested.
So
he's gone.
So he could be back in the jail, just in a different capacity.
Yeah, basically, yes. He has a new room. And a new roommate. And apparently the version of the squeeze he's going to be seeing and experiencing will be a little different than the one he thought he would.
Yes.
Ah, boy, that'd make me angry if that ever happened to me.
I can imagine.
I got to tell you, Peter, I'm angry right now, in fact.
Why is that?
Well, you know what happens? People get angry. They throw things. Not me. I get angry. I take keyboard in hand and write a 2-minute tirade. Yes. I've written one, and I'd like to share it with you if I may.
Tirade away.
Well, thank you very much. You know, Peter, many sports fans have just finished watching one of the most exciting events in the sports calendar, the NCAA Basketball Championship, which, for folks who watched it, was won by Duke in an exciting final game over upstart Butler. My problem is not with the game, but with the delays in the game. You know, there was a time when you could turn on a basketball game, college or pro, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and count on the post-game show being concluded by 3 o'clock, even if the game went to overtime. Those days are long gone. Now there's more downtime than actual playing time. A 48-minute NBA game takes about 2.5 hours to play, as does a 40-minute college hoops contest. Why? Because of the never-ending timeouts. That's why. A friend of mine was at the Final Four in Indianapolis, and he called me to tell me that the Saturday game between Michigan State and Butler had approached the 3-hour mark. And there was no overtime, Peter. He went on to whine about how each team has 10 timeouts and there are obligatory officials timeouts structured throughout the game, meaning you're in for a long wait if you want to just watch basketball. You know, it's bad enough that the game lasts almost 3 hours. The final 2 minutes last almost half hour. Again, it's each team using up all of its allotted timeouts. Geez, even what they call 20-second timeouts last a couple of minutes. Peter, these pain-in-the-butt timeouts ruin the flow of the game. There is no flow any longer in a basketball game because what we have is play 8 seconds, take a 2 to 3 minute timeout, play another 7 seconds, take another 2 to 3 minute timeout. You know, an argument is made that commercials must be run. True, but on some of these lengthy timeouts, there were no commercial breaks, just announcers trying to fill time with worthless dribble. The National Football League, the most watched game in North America, gets by with 3 timeouts per team per half, for a total of 12. But you know, it's rare that even half the timeouts are used in an NFL game, because the winning team does not stop the clock. In basketball, it seems no one wants to go to the locker room with timeouts in the back pocket, so even if down by 20 points with 10 seconds to play, a coach feels a need to use up those final timeouts. It's time to restore some sanity, Peter. Limit the number of timeouts and let the guys play basketball.
Well, you know, Steve, you know how I feel about the game of basketball.
You're not a fan, huh?
No, I just see it as guys with glandular problems and squeaky shoes.
Interesting, there's that, me being pigmentally challenged and you being in full pigment.
Yes,
It's opposite of what it should be. I'm the basketball fan and you're not.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a certain seed spitting contest that I have no interest in either, or the element the seed comes from.
Enough said. Going there. Jeez. Wow.
Steve.
Yes, sir.
Say those 3 magic words.
Okay. Hit the theme!
This is the Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have time for one more story, and that would be the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Sheriff's deputies in Florida said a 19-year-old woman who asked for a ride home was arrested after opening a can of malt liquor in the back of the patrol car. The Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office said Tasha Lee Cantrell, age 19, asked Deputy Mitchell Landis for a ride to her Fort Walton Beach home after her friend was pulled over and arrested for driving under the influence. The police report said Landis heard Cantrell open a can of some sort while in the back of his cruiser. As I looked at my in-car video, I observed Cantrell drinking out of an unknown can, Landis wrote. Landis also wrote he stopped the car and Cantrell attempted to hide the can between her legs. He identified the can as containing Steel Reserve, a malt liquor with a high alcohol content. Cantrell was arrested and charged with misdemeanor underage drinking. Why would someone get into the back seat of a patrol car and open up a can of malt liquor when clearly they are underage? Well, one could say it's youthful indiscretion, but the easier and more likely answer is probably... she's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0034. Hope you've enjoyed it. Tell all your friends. Tell them where they can find the show. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests on the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0034. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can find me also at facebook.com/PAHolder and twitter.com/PAHolder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, streaming on PCJMedia.com, and over the air on World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand. Bye-bye.
Getting Jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.